Hey, y'all. It's me, Dr. Smita Raman, Gyno Girl. Welcome to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm Dr. Smita Raman, and I'm super excited to have my friend and colleague on the show, which we haven't done yet, Dr. Carolyn Moyers. Welcome to SDH. I'm going to start calling it SDH, Sex, Drugs, and Hormones.
It's catchy. It's catchy. I love your bold title. I'm like, go, girl.
And then I was, I've been courting my listeners as the vagilantes.
Yeah, vagilantes. Love it.
My husband made that up. He's like, you know, everyone has like their crew, and you should have your vagilantes. And I was like, okay.
That is cute. Yeah.
Vagilantes. Anyway, how's it going? Thanks for coming on my show.
We were just thrilled to be here.
I know we've been like back and forth, but it's so funny because Carolyn and I met like, I don't know, 6 years ago. Was it? It was right before the pandemic. It was the Dallas before. It was the Ishwish conference right before the pandemic. No.
Was it before? I feel like it was after.
Wait, hold on.
Because I was already in practice. So I feel like it was like 2021, maybe.
When was Dallas's Ishwish?
I don't know.
Oh, you know what? 2020 was in Florida. That's what it was.
So it was 21?
It was 22 because 21 was virtual.
22. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Anyways, yes. So we've been friends for a while. I've had you on the podcast. Actually, I just sent an email to my list yesterday and we were I was just talking about, you know, what we have coming up. But one of the things that I was addressing was sexual concerns. And I referenced the podcast that you do with me, which was like episode 67, and we're on over 200 episodes.
Oh, very good.
So, yeah.
That's awesome. Oh, yeah, because we did libido, I think, one time. All right, cool. Well, how's everything? How's your practice in Dallas?
So I'm in Fort Worth, Texas, and I serve women all over the state of Texas. So we're menopause and sexual medicine, and it's going wonderful. I love what I'm doing. I've loved this transition.
Yes.
I didn't intend to be the menopause queen, but that's just kind of how it's landed. You know, when you open a gynecology only practice, they're like, oh my God, you have time to hear me. You're not going to run out and deliver a baby.
Exactly.
You're going to be present. And I just find that women are really demanding quality care when it comes to perimenopausal. We're not taking it sitting down anymore.
No way. So I should tell the listeners how you came into the space. I always ask people because, you know, we all have our own journeys. Mostly it's a patient or a personal thing, but that for
you. Yeah. So how did I come into this space? So I, you know, spent my first 5 years doing rural health. So just general OBGYN in rural medicine. And then when we relocated to Fort Worth, it's like, it was a strange transition going from being the big fish in a little pond to there's over 100 OBGYNs here. You know, kind of what makes you unique. So, you know, I took a job for a year and then I started doing some hospitalist work when I was having my third son, and found that the shift work, you know, was kind of nice, but then the volume was kind of low and it's exhausting, right? And so I had this opportunity that just presented to help develop a gynecology program for a hormone therapy clinic. And so I went and vetted them out and I said, okay, I'll do this. And I was very pleased with my progress in the year of like developing what does gynecology care look like in this space and what can we do and pap smears and birth control and hormone therapy, et cetera. And training all of their nurse practitioners and PAs. But at the end of the year, I also had just a handful of cases and I wasn't really ready to just do office gynecology. And so I went back to full-time hospitalist work downtown and I thought it was going to be amazing, right? And offer me so much more freedom. And I found that I was dead tired and felt like I was drunk all the time, you know, because I was just trying to recover. And I had then three small children at home. So I have four boys total, three small children at home. And it was just not what I wanted. So in the height of the pandemic is when I said, I'm going to open my own doors. I had this nudge because I had done so much work towards developing a program at the hormone therapy clinic. And I felt like we can do better. Everybody does not need to be injected with testosterone. Like this is not how it should be done. And so that's what pushed me to get menopause certified. And then as you start doing menopause medicine, you know, when I opened the doors, I thought that my osteopathic skill set was going to be my secret sauce. You know, I thought all my OBGYN colleagues are going to send patients to me and I'm going to do osteopathic adjustments for their OB patients, and they'll do the primary OB care. But the women just... What's that?
I said, I remember that. That was your goal initially. Yeah.
Yeah, I really thought, but you know, I've just pivoted over the years because women, like I said, are just demanding quality care here. And so, as I started treating menopause, well, what comes with that? And perimenopause, all the sexual health issues that we didn't learn about in residency. And so that's where, you know, I landed at Ishwish and I met you, and I've learned so much and taken so many, like any course that Ishwish puts out, I'm like, yes, sign me up. Yeah, I want to do that because we just didn't learn enough about it. And if I'm going to do this, I want to do it well.
Something every time you take one of these courses too, like I retake them sometimes just to see what the newest is, because the presenters end up having to like, then, you know, dig deep into the newest information. So
Yeah,
absolutely. Awesome. Okay. Well, so it sounds like a lot of, you know, we're doing, you know, pretty much the same thing in different states. But I wanted to talk to you about, like, you know, this is going to air during Perimenopause Awareness Month, which is in September. And so tell me a little bit about, you know, either your peri experience or what you find the most compelling symptoms that you're seeing in your office for your patients, and whether or not it's typically what we expected them to see.
Yeah. You know, what I find interesting about perimenopause is that, you know, the symptoms are across the board, and the patients are so busy in life, you know, whether it's career or raising kids and then aging parents, that they oftentimes just don't even recognize it. They just know that they don't feel themselves, or they're running to this specialist and that specialist because now, you know, they've got some palpitations and not, you know, they might not even be having hot flashes or night sweats yet. Their periods may be crazy, but they haven't been paying attention to them. It's the weight gain and the weight loss resistance that leads a lot of them to my doorsteps to be like, I'm sorry, the things that used to work are no longer working. Yeah. So that, you know, that the collection of symptoms, it's more than just hot flashes, night sweats, and vaginal dryness.
Yeah.
I will tell you that I choose to be very proactive about perimenopause because I watched my mother go through menopause and she had had a hysterectomy years prior because of painful heavy periods and had adenomyosis, et cetera, but had kept her ovaries. But whenever I was graduating from residency, she was going through menopause and she couldn't even sit down to eat. Like eating was a trigger for her for a hot flash. And I remember, you know, like go see my colleague, get on some hormone therapy, but I had no idea the nuances of adjusting the hormone therapy. Like you don't have to live like that.
I know.
You know, you can actually have a meal with friends and not, you know, feel like that you're suffocating and heating up and needing to go outside and air out.
Yeah.
So I've chosen to be really proactive, but I have a Mirena IUD because I don't want to have a period and it's great birth control. And then my baby said, "You're getting mean as you get older." And I was like, "Oh my God, I am. I feel overwhelmed. I feel agitated. By 8:30 p.m., I'm like, everybody better go to bed."
Oh my God.
I just like so much less, it's just a shorter fuse. And that's when I started estrogen. And I have landed on the Femring and I'm in love. Like it's just the easiest, simple routine.
Really? I guess because it's a good amount of dosing there. I mean, like standardly, because I go between like the patch, and then sometimes I'll use my Bijuva samples in the office. Like, where am I at here? And my periods become cuckoo. Like, I'm like, wait, what did I do? Did I take it? Did I not take it? You know, but like my kids are the same way. I've said this before, but my 6-year-old calls, like whenever I'm angry, she calls it scary peri. Mama, is this scary peri? Like, is this what's happening right now? And I'm like, yes, that's scary, Perry. Okay. And then everyone goes, they run away. They scatter.
Like, oh my gosh. Like, watch out for scary Perry.
You want to go for a walk or something? Maybe you need to go for your run. You haven't run in today or whatever. And I'm just like,
Like
nudging. Or, you know, my PMS symptoms have gotten a bit worse too. So like sometimes you obviously then you get your period and you're feeling better. And then my 6-year-old told me last week, she goes, "I like you better when you're on your period." I was like, "What?" She goes, yeah. "You seem to be very much, you're so much nicer and just open and sweet." And I was like, whoa. And it actually didn't hit me that it's because I have such a bad PMS now.
Yeah. So that's a common symptom in perimenopause, isn't it? That PMS symptoms worsen. Periods can go all over the place, or maybe they're the same, but all of a sudden all your symptoms just don't seem manageable.
Yeah.
You know, you're more emotional, you're more agitated. I've even had patients say, you know, the hot flushes and the night sweats are worse in that couple of days prior to their period.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so interesting. And, you know, I think like I still haven't figured it out 100%. And this is what I do every day. That's what I've been doing for the last decade. Like, but it's easier to treat someone else, I think, you know, because then you don't,
you don't
even spot your own symptoms. I'm like, wait, I am being a little bit unreasonable. Yeah.
And then, right. Later. Well, I think that that's why I went to a colleague and I was like, okay, this is what we're going to do. You know, but I had to provide the paperwork, teach them how to dose testosterone, that. There's so much misinformation out there, but yeah, I try not to be my own clinician, but I did for a while try the Divigel. I hated how sticky it was. I tried the patch. I suck at changing it.
Yeah. You know,
so this is how I landed on the Femring.
Yeah, I said Femring because I'm between the patch and the Bijuva because, you know, you just get so many samples and then you're like, oh, I think I forgot my patch. I'm just going to use Bijuva for a few days. Do not do this. Do not do this.
Do what I say, not as I do. Yeah.
But yeah, maybe I'll try this. You can never get it covered from any of your patients, right? Like it's really hard to get covered sometimes.
Actually, okay. So whenever I first started prescribing the Femring a couple of years ago, I found that it was wild. Like either it would be covered or it'd be $50 or they would be told it was $850 or $35 or something crazy, you know? And I'm finding more and more now that it's covered or at a minimum, you know, I send to a specialty pharmacy that will apply the manufacturer coupons. Yeah. And so at most, patients are out of pocket $183. That's for the 3 months, you know, just for your Femring. No. So I do like to dose patients with either the gel or a patch to find like that, because we have so many incremental doses with the patch and the gel that we can do versus the Femring. We only have two doses, which they're very common dosing, right? We have the 0.05 milligram and the 0.1, but you just have two doses. And for some people, you know, the 0.0375 might be just the perfect dosing for
them. Plus, you're in menopause, right? 1 month is a loop cycle and your estrogen's like 1,000 and the next month your estrogen's like 10. And so like...
sometimes less is more.
So sometimes it's like a matter of teaching your patients like and yourself, like, is this a sign of too much estrogen that I'm getting this month? And so maybe I back off. And it's easier to do when you have a bunch of different doses around, right? So that's kind of how I do it with my patients. I'm like, oh, okay. So I have a 0.5 and I had a lot of headaches and a lot of breast tenderness. And so maybe I should do the 0.37. But that's
But I always say that perimenopause is more difficult to manage than menopause because you've got the pesky period running around that you've got to try to handle. And so this is why a Marine IUD is one of my favorite things.
Agreed.
I mean, it just diminishes that bleeding. 90% reduction in bleeding the first 6 months of use. So if it works for you, it's phenomenal. You know, so sorry if you're that one person who is not going to work for it, but you know, so often it is. I find that there's so many myths about perimenopause and it drives me crazy. Too often women are told it's all in your head. They get their labs done and they're told they're normal. Everything's fine. And they leave going, I don't feel normal. You're too young for it. Hormone therapy just delays the inevitable. There's birth control pills. That's all we can do. You know, and the truth is that perimenopause can start in as early as your 30s. Early 40s, and it's real, and it's a clinical diagnosis. The labs do not diagnose perimenopause, and it can last 7 to 10 years before that final menstrual period. That is not a small phase of life.
I know. Quick reality check. If you're listening to this and thinking, why does no one ever talk to me like this in my doctor's office? That's because most doctors aren't trained to, nor do they have the infrastructure for it. That's why I started the GYN and Sexual Medicine Collective, my new concierge practice where sexual wellness, hormone health, and gynecology actually come together like they're supposed to. No 10-minute visits, no gaslighting, no have a glass of wine, relax. Just evidence-based, shame-free care for women who are done settling for bad sex, brain fog, hot flashes, or feeling invisible. I'm proud to be part of the Ms. Medicine Network, which means your care is rooted in science, not stigma. Find us at www.thegsmcollective.com and book the kind of appointment you wish you had years ago. Your body called. It wants its power back. Let's go. It's a lot, actually, especially with your struggling with all the other things that we always talk about, right? Like, it's so interesting to see how transformative things like lifestyle changes and hormones can be on a patient. And they just weren't even aware of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Whether it's cycle change or their mood changing, their energy level changing, sleep. I mean, and when cycles start changing, we start to see this fatigue just from, you know, being worn out from all the abnormal bleeding and the hormonal changes. It's just so frustrating. I mean, I'm sure you see this, but the most common complaint I hear is I don't feel like myself anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of how I feel too sometimes. I just don't.
So you're in the thick of it.
In the thick of it. No, but it's true. And I think that that's something that, you know, we've even seen in the studies, the NLF, not feeling like myself. The NFSM or whatever, feeling like myself. Yeah. That they showed it in the study out of the menopause. I think it was out of the Mayo, where they actually asked women a bunch of questions around not feeling like themselves. And it was like 67% of women over the last 3 months said that that was like the predominant thing. And I think it just goes to speak to like how we don't address some of the disruptions around mood and metabolic function, which make people feel like not themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know we start seeing a lot of the metabolic changes as we enter midlife and start having these hormonal shifts. And I always say once postpartum, always postpartum. So if you've had gestational hypertension, diabetes, like these things will present later in life, even thyroid disorders, you know, and I know a lot of patients say, you know, I feel like I have ADHD now because they're like losing that focus and having trouble with work performance. And it all kind of goes hand in hand, right? Because if you're having hot flashes at night, so you're not sleeping or you're bleeding every 14 day, you know, like you have a lot of reasons to feel fatigued and not yourself. And I think that I really want patients to feel empowered to know that there are so many solutions, that it's not just birth control.
Yeah, exactly. Like when you talk about metabolic dysfunction, what are some of the things that you're like telling your patients or guiding them or treating with what medications, that kind of thing, like with weight gain?
Well, I think it depends. So I like to do a comprehensive panel first and see, you know, to make sure, because as I said before, it's a clinical diagnosis. So this is not one that will be made based off of a lab. Yeah. But I do like to get labs to make sure that we're ruling out any underlying causes.
Right.
Right. And so that we're addressing that. And then with that, you know, explain to patients that, yeah, our metabolism shifts, our hormone levels change, our body distribution shift, and it leaves us all incredibly frustrated. Right. Yeah. But there's also, you know, just the fact that we have a natural decline in muscle mass in the menopause transition of 0.6% a year. If we're not doing strength training to build our muscles, then we are going to see a more significant decline in or change in that body composition. Protein rich diet, staying active, right? We're much more sedentary than we've ever been. Yeah. And so finding opportunities for movement, prioritizing sleep. I mean, we've heard of that. What is it, like a bedtime procrastination? Like we're self-sabotaging almost, you know, because we finally get the kids to bed.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, quiet time for ourselves. Next thing you know, it's 11:30 and you're like, oh my God, you know, I've got to wake up and do this all over again tomorrow.
Yeah.
So prioritizing sleep is so important. Managing our stress, staying hydrated. I mean, all of these things play into, you know, a best performing metabolism that we could have. And then hormone therapy is icing on the cake to help us feel ourselves so that we have the energy to do the things that we need to do, right?
Yeah.
Some people are like, I just don't have the energy to get off the couch and I don't care.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, you know, not ignoring the mood is so important because we know that even hormone therapy and perimenopause can be as effective in treating mood disorders as antidepressants.
Yep. Exactly. I think that's very important. And I also think that like when it comes to some of the metabolic stuff, the one thing that I have the hardest time helping patients with is stress management. Because I feel like those stress levels can, you know, it's some things are not, they can't change, right? Like some things like, okay, I have, you know, a sick parent or I have, you know, kids that I'm running around with. So I'm always like, you have to give yourself grace, right? Like you have to give yourself grace in this period of time. But you know, you may not be, you may just be able to go for that walk. And I think that's why I was watching the video. I think it was the Holderness family with the weighted vests.
Oh, the weighted vest. Yeah.
Like the phenomenon. Jackie.
I love that. Yeah.
But I think that, like, you know, that's why people pick whatever they can. If it's just going for a walk. I just actually put a walking treadmill under my standing desk in the office.
Yes, I have the same thing.
Right.
Yep. Because same thing.
Especially now that I've gone to concierge and so I'm reducing the number of patients I see in a day. So that gives me time to, like, you know, type and sit and do other things in between and make sure I'm calling my patients back. But I'm like, one of my patients was like, "Are you on a treadmill?" And I'm like,
yeah, yeah. I do telehealth calls for my treadmill.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
I'm on my walking treadmill. And they're like, "Oh, okay." But you have to get the steps going.
Yeah, we have to get the steps going. We have to move our body. We have to lift weights. And I think, you know, with stress management, yeah, everybody's going to deal with that differently, right? So often patients are asking for their cortisol levels, and I never catch the cortisol misbehaving. Yeah. You know, it's usually lifestyle. And so how do we manage this? And, you know, mindfulness is important. And of course, yoga can be helpful, simple breathing exercises. I love this little hack that I do now as a thought dump at night.
Oh.
So just journaling, and it's part of cognitive behavioral therapy that's been proven to be helpful. But I love to just do a little thought dump. Unedited, doesn't need to be spelled correctly, doesn't need to be in paragraph format or anything, you know, just dump it. And then I write down three things that were a win for the day. And then three things if I do tomorrow is a win. And every time I do that, it sets me up for success, right? Because it clears my mind. It allows me to just go to sleep with ease. Anything that was worried or needs to be done the next day is already there, listed for me. But I feel that I wake up with more intention.
Yeah. What'd you say? Three wins for the... I'm going to write this down.
Yeah. So a thought dump and then three wins for the day. And it could be something as simple as, you know, I saw all of my patients and...
I mean, gratitude journaling,
it's like gratitude,
right?
Chart, it's journaling. Like, yes, it's just resetting your mind. Yeah. I saw all my patients and charts were completed. You know, I spent quality time with the kids at dinner. You know, whatever that is for you, you count your wins no matter how small, you're looking for them. And, you know, an untrained mind runs havoc.
Yeah.
And then three things that are, that if I get done tomorrow are a win.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I've started, one of my best friends from college visited me recently. She lives in Hawaii and she is really into calligraphy. So she like once every couple months will write me a very long letter and I'll read it and have every intention of writing back. And I start it and I never do. But she took me to this like this big pen place in Chicago. I can't even remember the name now. But anyway, it is a place where like they have sell calligraphy pens and notes and stuff. So what I've done is I've started actually writing, like I wrote her a letter. But actually, even if you're just practicing, you know, cursive writing fancily, learning some of the calligraphy, like from, you know, YouTube, it's so therapeutic because you're actually like so focused on something else.
Sure.
And the, you know, sometimes the pens and the ink are so pretty that, you know, you're like, oh, this is so pretty. And like you're writing it so good. Right. I know it's silly, but when I started doing it, I was like, oh, no wonder she does this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's kind of like it's a form of therapy.
It's like a stress reduction, little form of meditating and just being
present.
Yeah, I'm
going to write you a letter. I'm going to send you a letter.
Okay, fantastic. I'll be looking for my gyna girl letter.
Shout out to Morgan, my friend, who showed me how to do this. Anyway, sometimes she listens. Sometimes she tells me she listens.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I think that's great because I think the stress reduction is the biggest thing, right? Like I have so many friends who have like, you know, also like kids that are applying to college, like that's such a stressful process, it seems like these days. And
Sure. Yeah. And so often moms are busy doing all of the things
for other
people. Or women are doing so busy doing all the things for all the other people and not, you know, making a date with themselves, making themselves a priority and getting it done. But not to put the blame on them, but you know, life changes, we're just less active. And so there are, when we're talking about weight loss and how we kind of guide the patients on the metabolic aspect, I do have patients. I offer a couple of things. So I partner with Holist for a weight wellness program, and it's a 12-week educational weight wellness program. Uh-huh. Shout out to Heather Hammerstead, Dr. Heather Hammerstead, who is boarded in lifestyle medicine. I love the program, and it's like dripped to them over 12 weeks. So every day they're getting a new podcast with that little bite-sized information. Uh-huh. And it deals a lot with the mindset around food.
Okay.
And so there's some journaling involved in it that helps us kind of rethink what we're doing with food. And I find it incredibly helpful. So I have a lot of patients who love doing that. Another option is to work with a nutritionist. So we have a nutritionist who actually bills insurance, and she is phenomenal. We'll do a 2-hour intake with patients to go over what they're actually eating and what edits could help them to meet their goals. You know, sometimes it's as simple as just committing to, we're not snacking, we're not having added sugar. We're going to have 3 square meals a day.
Yeah.
And flour's not our friend anymore.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Rice and pasta. Yeah. Not our friends anymore.
Not our friends. All the inflammation. That's good too. And then obviously, like, for some people, they need to use some medications, and I know we're all very open to some.
Yes. Of course. Yeah. I mean, some patients go on metformin. Some people elect for GLP-1s or the GLPs and GIPs. I love a good semaglutide or tirzepatide. I mean, it decreases inflammation. A lot of times it helps patients to actually start to see progress with their efforts. And so it's that jump start to say, oh my God, I can do this. Some people are able to come off of it, and others who have chronic obesity may need to stay on it long term.
I agree. Totally. That's awesome. Tell me a little bit about so you're not doing much in terms of osteopathic manipulation, or you still are?
No, I still do plenty of osteopathic manipulation. So in my membership, I include it. Okay. So patients get OMT quarterly as part of their membership, or more often if they desire. And then I do it for my OBGYN colleagues in the Dallas-Fort Worth area will send their pregnant patients to me to do their osteopathic treatment. And it's hands-on, drug-free treatment that helps to realign the musculoskeletal system and release, myofascial tension, et cetera. Can help with parasympathetic, sympathetic balancing, and that helps them get into that. We can help to balance that autonomic nervous system, whereas, with parasympathetic, sympathetic nervous system, we're often in that fight or flight mode.
Yeah.
And so I find that it's really helpful for relaxation, and not to mention, aches and pains. I use it a lot for pelvic pain. I use it for post-op surgery recovery as well.
Yeah. That's great. Sure. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of benefit to a lot of those different types of manipulations that I've seen patients get. And so I feel like in pregnancy, it helps a lot, because a lot of people won't touch a pregnant woman. But luckily, you're an OBGYN.
Yeah. I know. I'm like, who better hands for you to be in?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have found it really rewarding, because in my fellowship that I did in neuromusculoskeletal medicine, I would do 3 months on and 3 months off. So I'd be like, I would go to family medicine for 3 months, and then I would be back in the OMT fellowship. So that clinical continuity, I didn't really see as much. And so it's been really fun incorporating it into my practice, because patients are getting fabulous results.
Yeah.
Whether it's an acute onset of pain just because pregnancy is uncomfortable, or it's that they had, a motor vehicle accident or horseback riding accident or some cheerleading accident, in earlier years. And then here comes pregnancy, and it's, you're going through a metamorphosis, and it's incredibly uncomfortable. So I find it rewarding for all stages, the relief that patients are getting. I mean, I've had people come in on a cane, and then the next couple of visits, they don't need a cane anymore.
That's amazing.
Right? Or it's the first time that they haven't needed Tylenol in pregnancy from back pain that they thought I was just going to have to live with this. I find it to be a fabulous tool. But in an insurance model, I did not have time for it.
Yeah, of course. We know our system is so broken when it comes to that stuff. So, but I like to end, I've been doing this new thing called Vagilante Verdict. So it's like your hot take that you want the listeners to go home with. Like, whether or not it's like a piece of advice, or, what you think they should be looking for in clinician, or, whatever, what your hot take is.
Okay. So I've got a couple that are coming to mind. I'm like, vaginal antibiotics. Okay. All right. So I think perimenopause versus menopause, the symptoms are similar. So I think it's important for perimenopausal women to know that the symptoms are similar. We just have this pesky period in perimenopause. Every vagina loves estrogen. Vaginal estrogen is girl's best friend. Use her for life. And menopause.org and ishwish.org are fabulous resources to find a provider in your area or even in your state. If you're in a small area and you don't have any resources to, in your immediate area, someone who is licensed in your state could help you virtually. Obviously, if you have some vulvovaginal disorders and you need a vulvar exam, that's going to have to be in person. Mm-hmm. But if it's for menopausal care, a lot of it can be done virtually.
Absolutely. That's a great benefit of at least having the time to talk to a patient, right? So.
Yeah. I mean, my first appointment is easily an hour, if sometimes more.
Me too.
You know, just because it takes time to sort through.
Yeah, exactly. Well, awesome. Well, are you coming to Ishwish this year?
I will be at Ishwish. Okay. Yeah.
In Long Beach, right? And then what about menopause conference? Are you coming to it in Orlando?
I'm going to be doing menopause virtually this year.
Okay. That's great. That's great. Well, I mean, we'll miss you, but I think I'll go a couple days of the menopause conference. But anyway, so thanks, Carolyn, for being here. This was fun. It's nice catching up with you and seeing your smiling face.
Always happy to get together.
and thanks, everyone, for listening today. I'm Dr. Samir Mon, Gyno Girl. Thanks for joining me for another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. Remember, I'm here to educate so you could advocate for yourself. Please join me on my next episode.
If you have a second, please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. Review us, comment, tell me what else you want to hear to get more information. My practice website is www.cgcchicago.com. My website for Gyno Girl is www.gynogirltv.com. My Instagram is Gyno Girl, so please follow me for some good content. Additionally, I have a YouTube channel, Gyno Girl TV, where I love to talk about all these things on YouTube. And please subscribe to my newsletter, Gyno Girl News, which will be available on my website. I will see you next time.